You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Ko meri makareta tōku ingoa nau mai haere mai ki te wā mo tēnei rā. Kia ora. It's Mary Margaret here. It's Rātu, June 23rd. You're on 95BFM. This is, of course, The Wire. I'm jumping on Justin's show today as he has an exam, so we will definitely be keeping him in our thoughts. And you'll hear him again on Thursday. Little switcheroony. Keep things spicy. In the meantime, I'll be taking you through the next hour. Efakine coming up on the show today. I speak to low-carbon specialist Robbie Sutherland about the extent to which responsibility for climate issues lies with the public versus government and about which initiatives are available for volunteering this winter. Oscar speaks to Richard Hills in this week's instalment of City Counselling, and we hear about the logistics of council's operations now we're back at level one. Jemima speaks to Tom Kay of Forest and Bird about water pollution risks and lack of government action. And in the Green Desk this week, Bronnie learns about the UNESCO Commission for Culture in New Zealand, where a new commissioner has just been appointed. As always, love to hear your thoughts. Tukupatuhi mai, text me on 5395. Wai mai rane, give me a call, 309 3879. And of course, you can catch all these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website. I got told off for being delayed with my podcasting this morning, so I know that I'll be held on my toes. Right, Sarah? Woohoo! But let's get into it, shall we?
You needn't be a communist to care about your community.
You guys.
Community Garden with Oscar Perez.
Yes, it is indeed time for another Community Garden. Not with Oscar today, though. I am speaking to Robbie Sutherland. At last year's climate action protests across the globe, we heard calls for government and corporations to divest and reform. Although the fight to emphasise the responsibility of big business continues when it comes to climate change, there are still viable opportunities for volunteering for sustainable initiatives here in Tamaki. Robbie Sutherland, as I've said, is a low-carbon specialist at Council, and he joined me this morning to talk about which initiatives are around this winter that we can join to protect our local environment. I started by asking about distinguishing the importance of opportunities for community action from the importance of governments committing to their word that climate change must be mitigated.
Oh, I think they're both absolutely important. Our team in particular encourages Aucklanders really to take the individual everyday actions that they can make to reduce their own carbon impacts or climate impacts. And we've done the research to find out that the sort of 10 biggest things, I guess, that really affect individual impacts on the climate. And that's things like how you travel, the food choices you make, what we buy and don't buy, the energy we use, and of course not wasting stuff. And then as you also point out, we also encourage people to talk about what they're doing. So if you're cycling every day and reducing your environmental impact by not driving a petrol car, then certainly tell the world about that and to normalise the behaviour. And then feeding into that sort of broader, legislative picture, I guess taking the opportunities to have your say, to affect change in sort of local and, I guess, national government sort of legislation and rules. And from a volunteering perspective, for advocacy-based organisations and events, to look at those that sort of align with your own values and take those opportunities to get involved.
I wonder also what you make of the obligations that we have to Papatūānuku under Te Tiriti o Waitangi, because a lot of the issues that we're dealing with now are ones that came about from colonisation. What do you make of the importance of being hands-on when we are tangata tiriti?
Oh goodness! I think it's really important to be hands-on in our role as kaitiaki of the environment, and that sort of feeds through into the sort of environmental actions that we can take. It's both the direct environmental action, like, you know, planting trees, but also avoiding that environmental harm as well. So, so looking at, you know, how can I reduce my emissions through, instead of taking the car today, jump on my bike, or just looking at, you know, what sort of food choices am I making? Can I bulk up my veggies a bit and reduce my impacts that way? And I guess if everybody's taking those individual actions to reduce their climate impacts, and then that all adds up to an awful lot.
You have more experience with some of the volunteering opportunities listed in this article than others. What ones would you like to tell us about first?
Yeah, we list a whole bunch of volunteering opportunities with community organisations in the Auckland region. I can probably talk most personally about ones that I've been involved with.
Yeah, go for it.
So we've got mentioned in there is the Eco Matters Environment Trust. They're based out in New Lynn, and they're involved in a whole lot of environmental action areas, and one of those is bike hubs. Bike hubs are sort of bike fix-it places in the community, often run out of old shipping containers, actually repurposed with a pop-up site, and they're places where people can go to take their bikes that, you know, may need a little bit of TLC, and to learn the skills to be able to keep those maintained and running. In a previous life, I was a bike assembler for a big box store and had a few of those skills already. So I thought I'd go and help out at my local bike hub in Henderson. And that was really cool, just helping people who, you know, you just don't know who's going to wander in next and what condition their bike's going to be in. And just, you know, working alongside them to help teach the skills at the same time so that they can maintain their own bike. Bike hubs also repurpose bikes that might have been destined for the waste stream. So you're giving those bikes a new lease of life and getting them back out into the community for people who can really make use of them. Also, tree planting is really big at this time of year. And I guess the cool thing about volunteering opportunities generally is there's a lot of choice there depending on what you're wanting to do as an individual. So you can either participate as an individual, you can get a group of people together, and tree planting is often really good for that. And also you can choose either inside, outside stuff, one-off events, and that, or even sort of ongoing volunteering opportunities for a few hours a week, or even more if you have the time. So I guess a lot of us have been in lockdown for a while, and thankfully the weather's sort of, it's not helping very much with Auckland's water crisis, but it's definitely helping at the moment with lovely sunny days for tree planting. And so plenty of tree planting events being advertised through Facebook at the moment. You can have a look at our Live Lightly Facebook site, or Auckland Parks is another good one, and also Our Auckland. Those are sort of organised planting days where you sort of turn up in a group and you can be directed to an area of often quite a large area to just plant as many trees as you've got time to put in the ground. And it can be a really fun and sort of worthwhile thing. You sort of see the fruits of your labour immediately. Yeah. And knowing that those trees are sort of busily sucking up carbon and helping out with our emissions. And again, you know, a whole lot of action from a whole lot of people, you know, adds up to millions of trees in the ground.
Yeah. Now, you know, we see the rise of advertising for things like keep cups, and it, of course it's always a good thing to replace single-use plastics with a keep cup, but in some ways the monetization of it has made this idea of zero waste somewhat inaccessible. So I was really interested to read that Tamaki Wrap is an initiative that you can join to learn more about waste reduction. How much do you know about Tamaki Wrap? Do you want to tell us about a bit about them?
Okay, I haven't worked with them personally. The RAP bit of their name stands for Waste Reduction Action Project. So definitely I think reducing waste is a huge thing. So, you know, just looking at that waste hierarchy and the very first one on there is refuse, you know, and do I really need to buy that?
Yeah.
and reusing or looking at more sort of sustainable products that that can be reused rather than single use. So Tāmaki Rapids is really involved in sort of enabling that mahi.
They also have, I feel like it's worth mentioning, their side project of United Sustainable Sisters, which is a project that increases access to sustainable menstrual products. I just thought we'd mention that in the wake of period poverty being discussed by this government.
Yeah, absolutely, and that did come out of a need to increase access to sustainable menstrual products and also to reduce the amount of waste sent to landfill. So, and that's an example of a volunteering initiative where a lot of the volunteering is actually in making those products, so in sewing.
Something that I found really exciting is how many of these initiatives are focused on bush restoration and restoration for native plants, birds, insects and fish, which has a lot more ecological pertinence than just tree planting, which is obviously also very important. The Kaipatiki Project introduces a lot of this as well. Do you want to touch on some of those more conservation-based opportunities?
Yeah, so I mean, we're right in the middle of the planting season now, so this is the time to sort of put those trees in the ground. But also, it's not just about planting trees. So the volunteer activities, as well as tree planting, are looking after those plantings into the future to make sure those trees have got the best possible opportunity to grow and flourish. So that's getting in there doing the weeding. And then often those groups are involved in prepping activities as well. So just to regenerate the entire bush and ecosystem. It's a very, very visible volunteering opportunities at the moment. Conservation Volunteers is another organisation involved in that. And I just thought I'd mention they run single and multi-day volunteering sessions. So they can involve sort of an overnighter. So I guess, yeah, lots of benefits to be gained from volunteering, you know, whether you're using an existing skill to help others in the environment, or whether you're keen to learn a new skill and do some good at the same time, and also perhaps in learning that skill, meet other people, get out and about in the environment, and possibly also learn a skill that may be useful for future job or other volunteering activity in the future.
I know from getting involved here at BFM the benefits of volunteering and feeling like you're part of a wider community, and all of these initiatives are examples of this too. To what extent do you think that COVID might invigorate a need for that in the collective mind of our nation?
Oh, I think it absolutely has done. I think that message about being kind and helping other Kiwis has been a really cool thing. It's come out of adversity, and we've just actually come out of the National Volunteering Week, which sort of celebrated the 1.2 million volunteers nationwide. And apparently, sort of post-COVID, I'm aware a lot of the charity organisations have been receiving unprecedented levels of calling from people interested in volunteering and helping out. I think, you know, that issue of food security and distributing food to the community, as well as, you know, and also people just getting out and experiencing cycling, you know, the great outdoors. There's just a huge interest in, I guess, helping to perpetuate that and to give something back to fellow Kiwis.
I'm sort of generalising at this point, but I wonder, as a follow-off on that, how much you think we might see this reflecting in more climate-friendly policy by this government and more acknowledgement and seizing of our responsibility as kaitiaki?
Oh, goodness. So what I would say, you know, personally, because our mission is to enable Aucklanders to live more sustainably and to you know, individually by choosing more sustainable or making more sustainable choices, you know, that all adds up to a lot. So it's action that people can take right now. And I guess demonstrating through those actions exactly the sort of world that we want.
Yeah.
I can't reach the potatoes.
Community Garden with Oscar Perez.
I'm going to name this one Cynthia.
Go forth and prosper.
that was Robbie Sutherland, and you can head to ourauckland.auckland council.gov.nz, and I'll of course post the link as part of the BCast for this segment, so do go check it out. Some of those look like cool initiatives that I might get involved with myself. I'll be right back. Here's Nov by Christoph El Chuento.
Oh, wait, stop, wait, spin the MC round the block, wait, better run around, not great, run the MC like a hot plate, it's not, wait, stop, wait, spin the MC round the block, wait, better run around, not great, up on the MC like a hot plate, I don't shoot, but I don't chat about shooting, fun men don't spit, fan they shoot, little man can't take me for you, what, same way man I get screwed by looks, but I don't chat about shooting, fun men don't spit, fan they shoot, little man can't take me for you, what, same way man I get screwed by looks, can't give it that blood, you've got rush, I still lick down to him, I don't care about YouTube. Views. What? Stay away, man, I get screwed by nooks. Can't give me that blood, move, give me that, that move. Got flicked down to and I don't care about YouTube views. Punch up, you live where you'll move, you'll move. Don't care, I'm rabble. Man, get slapped, I don't care, I'm rabble. Send for the shop, I don't care, I'm rabble. Slap man's down, I don't care, I'm rabble. New era cap, don't care, I'm rabble. I'll have that, I don't care, I'm rabble. What fam, what, I don't care, I'm rabble. Come to your spot, I don't care, I'm rabble. No, wait, stop, wait. Spin the MC round the block, wait. Bear man around, not great. Run the MC like a hot plate. It's not, wait, stop, wait. Spin the MC round the block, wait. Bear man around, not great. Run the MC like a hot plate. I don't shoot, blood don't chat about shoot. Gun men don't spit, fam, they shoot. Little man can't take me for you. Same way when I get screwed by looks. Blood don't chat about shoot. Gun men don't spit, fam, they shoot. Little man can't take me for you. Same way when I get screwed by looks. Can't give it that blood, new got rushed. I still lick down to you. I don't care about YouTube views. Same way when I get screwed by looks. Can't give it that blood, new, give it that, that new got licked down to you. I don't care about YouTube views. Punch up, you live where you'll move, you'll move. Don't care, I'm rabble. Man get slapped, I don't care, I'm rabble. Send for the shop, I don't care, I'm rabble. Slap man's down, I don't care, I'm rabble. New era cap, don't care, I'm rabble. I'll have that, I don't care, I'm rabble. What fam, what, I don't care, I'm rabble. Come to this spot, I don't care, I'm rabble. Man get
I rise from the dirt like flowers. Man, I tryna see bread like.
In the dark about your KiwiSaver is no big deal, right? It's just money. A few dollars. A few $100,000. Who needs to retire? On the other hand, you could talk to Kōra Wealth. Their 100% Kiwi-owned and operated KiwiSaver scheme is personalised for you, so you get the retirement you deserve. Ethical investments and some of the lowest fees in the industry. Shine a light on your future with Kōra Wealth. Visit kourawealth.co.nz today. That's kourawealth.co.nz.
Hakarongo mai, it's Māori words, because he waka eke noa.
E hika mā. Crikey.
Okay, new plan for 2020. I'm going to be New Zealand's Steve Irwin.
You've got the legs for it, but how are you going to be a crocodile hunter in Green Lane?
I mean, pick up an eel, say, ehika mā. That's what the people want.
True.
Ehika mā. Crikey.
Māori words. Karawhiua. Give it a go.
It's music.
We're an underground radio station. We say what we feel like saying.
We played it first.
The original originator. Go to 95bfm.com for show podcasts.
Now, tell me about your father.
City Counselling on 95bfm. Our weekly chat with the good people of Auckland Council.
Welcome back to The Wire. It is indeed time for City Counselling. Let's hear what Oscar has in store for us this week.
This week on City Counselling, we return to talk to the North Shore Ward Councillor, Richard Hills, who is also the Chair of the Environment and Climate Change Committee. We started by getting back up to speed with what and how Council is now going on at level one.
Thankfully now we're
in level one, so we can be back at council now with everyone. We are encouraged to work at home still if we don't have to come and meet everyone. But basically, we're still an emergency committee, but we can have our other committees start ramping up. So I'll have my first environment and climate change committee since COVID began. I'll have that in July. And we have already had a planning committee meeting and a parks community and events meeting as well. So things are sort of back to normal, which is really good. They're obviously with the drought, met with the Hamilton City Council with the Mayor and Watercare last week to discuss how we can access more of their water consent. And the Mayor met with Waikato Tainui and the Waikato District Council. So we've been dealing with the drought. We've also been dealing with our emergency budget, which has come from COVID. It's about a $525 million deficit.
With consultation on the emergency budget now closed, we turn back to look at the other most pressing issue in and for Tamaki Makaurau's council, the water shortage. To further shed some light on the council's work on what is a constantly evolving situation, I asked Richard Hills where we are now amidst the crisis.
Yeah, so the long term, there's lots of things in play, but short term, it's basically rain. That is the deal. So we're way, way under what a normal rainfall would be like for the whole year. So at this point in time, last year and most years, we sit around 70 to 80% of our dam capacity. Now we're at about 44%, and it's been hovering around there. Even with, we had quite a lot of rain about a week ago, and that only really brought the dams up about 1%. We've been asking people to save water and keep our daily use down to or under 410 million litres per day. And most days Auckland is hitting that target or under, which is good. I think some days last week we were hitting 415 was one of the highest, but mostly we're under 400 or under 405, which is good. Yeah, the issue is largely just rain. It's a pretty dire situation. We've been meeting with other councils to try and maybe access their consent. So if we get Hamilton Council's consent, we can get an extra 25 million litres from the Waikato every day. So we're already getting 150 million litres from the Waikato, but that is all we're consented for. We have had an application in for about 7 years for access to about 200 million litres a day. That has, I think we're 200th in line. Now we're 90th in line for that. There's another smaller dam coming on board in the next few months, but that's only small amount of water, about 1% of our daily needs that is. There's a few other water bores and things that have come on stream, but largely this is a potentially one in 200 year drought. So when we dip below 40%, hopefully we don't, but if we do, we'll be in level two water restrictions. There's not a lot of change for households, but there is for business. We've already been working, or Watercare's already been working with businesses, and they're effectively already in level two. That means large producers or users of water, such as food and beverage and other industries like that, have already reduced their water use by about 30% in preparation for this level two. So there won't be a lot of change. If we get sort of in the danger zone of like 20% water storage, then yeah, I don't think Aucklanders are quite ready for what that might mean. That would mean significant industry closed down and would not be able to operate. There would be potential for water being, you know, pressure being dropped and, yeah, us having to access water in different ways. So we're hoping we don't get to that. There is a lot of other emergency provisions that Watercare is working with Hamilton, Waikato District Council, and also looking at trim measures around non-potable water. So it's not a good story at all. We have, over the last 10 years, been increasing our water, access to water, and it has been fine year on year because it wasn't predicted that we would get this quite significant drought. But it will mean that we will likely have water restrictions right through winter, spring and summer.
Finally, Richard Hills explained to me what the return of the individual committee meetings within Auckland Council means for him and the boards that he chairs, elaborating on his committee agendas and the form of said meetings.
No, so definitely we can have public input already in June, but in July, yes, my committee people will be able to present, come and watch as they were pre-COVID. On my committee so far, there will be a report on the urban Ngahere, so the urban forest strategy for Auckland. We're aiming to get between 30 and 35% tree canopy across Auckland. You know, in my, where I live on the North Shore, I'm kind of blessed. We're sitting already at about 30% tree coverage, and that's private and public property in the urban area. But unfortunately, in areas like some of our South Auckland local boards, they're sitting at between 9 and 15% tree cover. So we've got a strategy we're putting forward to the 10-year budget, but it's also part of my climate plan that will enable, you know, quite significant tree planting, but I believe the focus should be in the areas that they don't have coverage. There's also been a kind of, people have sort of been putting out a misleading fact that we're losing significant tree coverage. We've had some quite significant data and images been taken from planes, and quite a LIDAR mapping exercise, and it can measure the heights and the coverage of the trees, and we have not actually seen a drop in tree canopy in the last 5 years, which is really good. Yes, people will see single trees and development and stuff taking away tree canopy, but at the same time we've been planting and those trees are growing up over time. So we're kind of standing still at the moment. I want to see kind of a significant increase in trees because they have a positive outcomes for stormwater, positive outcomes for reducing emissions. They have shade for kids walking home from school. They help with the amenity of cooling down the street. Yeah, so they've got significant benefits to them, so we need to be kind of investing in that. So that'll be one of the things on my agenda. There's another one around adverse weather effects. I'm not sure the complete details around that, but it's looking at, you know, over time with climate change, you know, who's responsible for coastal properties that get damaged by rising tides and storms and flooding and things like that, where we should build and shouldn't build. And there is also the Climate Action Plan, which will come to the committee. Pivakum and I obviously have been leading that work throughout lockdown and ensuring the plan is ready. And so then we'll be signing it off at that meeting at the end of July. I can't remember the exact date right now, but it's at the end of July. And then that will have been launched a couple months later online. So it's an online plan, which is pretty exciting.
Have you tried mindfulness? Try mindfulness.
City Counselling on 95 BFM.
That was Oscar speaking to Richard Hills. Thank you, everyone, for texting in. But now, this.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
Last month, the government proposed a set of new freshwater reforms with the aim of restoring Aotearoa's waterways within a generation. However, the reforms have come without a set limit on freshwater nitrogen levels. Forest and Bird is calling for a nitrogen limit to be introduced as part of the government's waterways reforms to hold regional councils accountable for the nitrogen pollution in their drinking water supplies. My news director Jemima Houston spoke to Forest and Bird freshwater spokesperson Tom Kay about why it's important to limit the nitrogen in our water and why some regions in Aotearoa are experiencing higher levels of pollution than others. Here is Jemima speaking to Tom.
To begin with, could you explain the issues with the government's new freshwater reforms?
So the government's new freshwater reform misses out a really vital component in regard to nitrogen limits in freshwater. So there was a proposal from the government science and technical advisory group to have a nitrogen limit of 1 milligram per litre for our rivers and streams to protect ecosystem health. And they've decided to not go ahead with putting that in the reforms.
Why was the limit not introduced by the government despite this advice?
We suspect that there's been some backroom lobbying going on. 14 out of 19 scientists said it should be there. We had a number of public health authorities submit through the submissions process saying that it should be there. And the majority of submissions said it should be there as well. A lot of other countries in the world, in Europe and China, parts of America have a similar limit, and even regions in New Zealand already have some bottom lines lower than that. So it's pretty crazy that it's missing.
So why is it important to have a limit? What does it actually mean day to day, having that in regulations?
Having a bottom line for nitrogen pollution in our rivers and streams means that all regional councils have to set rules that are more stringent than that for their rivers and streams in their region. So they have to manage their rivers to not get that polluted, basically. And that bottom line is set at 1 milligrams per litre because that's kind of the furthest we think we should let things go to try and avoid too much algal growth, to avoid toxic effects on fish, to make places nasty to go swimming or fishing or anything like that. So that's kind of like as bad as we think things should get to protect what New Zealanders value about fresh water.
And what sort of effect can pollution levels, if they get higher than that, have on people?
Well,
and fish
really interesting...
and other things.
yeah, this is a really interesting part of the conversation because when nitrogen gets higher than that 1 milligram per litre level, we start to get more algal growth, like I was saying, which we can actually get at lower levels than that. But we also start to get towards the levels where it's toxic to fish, so the fish that are in it actually just suffer toxic effects from nitrogen up at about 2.4 milligrams per litre and higher. But there's increasing evidence suggesting that elevated levels of nitrate nitrogen in water could be increasing rates of colorectal cancer. So if we're taking water directly from a river or stream, like we do in some places, say the Waikato, Auckland at the moment is looking at taking water from the Waikato for drinking, if we have nitrate levels higher than that, we're potentially causing or could be, you know, leading to increased rates of cancer. And if the water in our streams and rivers is connected to the water that's in the ground, and in the ground we're actually seeing much higher nitrogen levels than that 0.88 point that's potentially linked to cancer. And that's what Forest and Birds found through these this Official Information Act request, that a lot of the water that's going to people's taps in Canterbury is sort of, you know, way above that 0.88 potential risk point.
Now, I think I can guess perhaps what's causing an increase in nitrogen levels, but would you be able to explain what that is likely linked to?
Yeah, so the biggest thing we can point to is farming, and particularly intensive farming. So nitrogen levels in New Zealand's groundwater are generally at the, or naturally would be around sort of 0.15 to 0.7 milligrams per litre of nitrate nitrogen. It gets a little bit techy, but it's pretty low numbers, really. As soon as we start to get up above that, we know that we can basically say we've got some sort of human activity, likely farming in the catchment, that's affecting those levels. And as soon as we get up above sort of 2.5, we can say, right, we've probably got intensive farming in this catchment. You look at Canterbury, you look at some of the numbers that we've found in this drinking water, they're up sort of at 5.6. You can go, right, there's probably farming in the catchment. You look at Canterbury, you go, yep, there's a lot of farming in that region. So it's pretty easy to kind of put two and two together and go, look, there's just too much intensive farming going on in Canterbury, and it's on free draining, you know, gravelly soils. So all the nitrogen's just leaching straight through into the aquifers, and then we're piping that straight into people's taps.
So will those restrictions force farmers to abide by those rules? What would be the repercussions if the nitrate levels were higher because of farming? Would there be repercussions, or is it just sort of like a standard that needs to sort of be met?
Well, a lot of our rivers and streams in New Zealand already have nitrate nitrogen levels below 1 milligram per litre. So a lot of regions would already comply with that limit. A lot of farmers would probably already be doing enough to make sure they're meeting or helping meet that limit in our rivers and streams. But it would mean that those that are pushing things too far, or that those regional councils that aren't doing their job to kind of pull everyone into line and manage their streams and rivers better, would need to do more. And having that 1 milligram kind of cut-off bottom line just means that we're protecting more regions and more people from going the same way as Canterbury with their rivers and streams and with their groundwater. So that's kind of the link that we're really now hyper aware of in this kind of public health crisis that we're seeing, is that ecosystem health is so important to our public health.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire.
That was Jemima speaking to Tom Kay, and you're on 95BFM. I'll be back after this track by Tierra Whack. I've been blasting it all weekend. Well, since it came out, really, but especially over this last weekend. If you're a fan of the cowbell like me, then you'll like it. Here's Clones.
Let's keep that. I'm serious. don't delete that. What about you, brown? Everybody walking like me now. Everybody talking like me now. Word on what they wanna be now. What about you, brown? Everybody walking like me now. Everybody talking like me now. Word on what they wanna be now. What about you, brown? Everybody walking like me now. Everybody talking like me now. Word on what they wanna be now. What about you, brown? Everybody walking like me now. Everybody talking like me now. Word on what they wanna be now.
Whack whack dab shit killer. I just got holes in the dinner. I ain't been home in a minute.
What?
I ain't never seen no ceiling. Come and got, yeah, he kneeling. Audio, I'm top billing. All of my boys dope dealing.
What?
Super whack, I'm no villain. Nigga try to take my flow. Who the hell he think he is?
What?
I just wanna make my dough. Gotta take care of my kids. Handle bars, handle my beers. R.P. there's Odell's.
Yeah.
I would never tell no veil.
No.
Spit, but I wear no bibs. Nigga try to take my flow.
What?
Who the hell he think he is?
Yeah.
I just wanna make my dough.
Yeah.
Gotta take care of my kids. Just hopped off the plane, about to fuck up the game. Insane in the brain, yeah. Niggas know my name, yeah.
What about Ebound? Everybody walking like me now. Everybody talking like me now. Heard on what they wanna be now. What about Ebound? Everybody walking like me now. Everybody talking like me now. Heard on what they wanna be now. What about Ebound? Everybody walking like me now. Everybody talking like me now. Heard on what they wanna be now. What about Ebound? Everybody walking like me now. Everybody talking like me now. Heard I'm what they wanna be now.
I sure friend, no Willie. No. Broke as a joke, you silly. Get right, bitch, I'm Gilly.
Right.
Bitch, I rock like Millie.
Ooh.
Born and raised in Philly.
Queen.
Fuck around and roll like Hilly.
Ooh.
Heart so cold, it's chilly.
Yeah.
Stole my style, you guilty.
Nigga
try to take my flow. Who the hell he think he is? I just wanna make my dough. Gotta take care of my kids. Handlebars, handle my beers. R.P. there's Odell's. I would never tell no veil. Spit, but I wear no bibs. Nigga try to take my flow. Who the hell he think he is? I just wanna make my dough. Gotta take care of my kids. Just hopped off the plane. About to fuck up the game. Insane in the brain, yeah. Niggas know my name, yeah.
What about Ebound? Everybody walking like me now. Everybody talking like me now. Heard on what they wanna be now. What about Ebound? Everybody walking like me now. Everybody talking like me now. Heard on what they wanna be now. About Ebound, everybody walking like me now. Everybody talking like me now. Heard I'm who they wanna be now. What about Ebound, everybody walking like me now. Everybody talking like me now. Heard I'm who they wanna be now.
Can you imagine the world before coffee?
I'll tell you what, I'm two coffees deep right now, and I'm still having trouble imagining the world. There's just so many bits in it. You know, it's just hard to keep it all in your head.
Maybe have another coffee and try again.
Imagine Auckland before coffee. Thanks to Atomic Coffee Roasters, you don't have to. Auckland's original coffee roasters and your local since 1992. Swing by their Kingsland-based cafe and roastery or shop online at atomiccoffee.co.nz.
Discover the diversity of science at the Royal Photographic Society Science Photographer of the Year exhibition on now at MOTAT. For the first time outside of London, 47 intriguing images of science in action. Entry included with general admission. Go to motat.nz.
Oh, yo, this beat slaps.
It rips hard, eh?
Yep, totally. Check out The Flip. Link in bio.
Killing it. F's in chat, fam.
Link in bio, fam. Sound up. Click right here for more Metro Boomin, X Mike Will, X Offset, X Quavo type beat.
Three fire emoji.
Remix of the day is rounding out your morning glory with one chopped, not slopped, banger. Weekdays before midday on 95BFM. Thanks to Lord of the Fries, saving the world bite by bite.
Kia tau te rangi marie, o rangi nui e tui honei, o papu tuanuku e takatonei, o te tai au e awhinei I a tātou, tihei Māori ora.
This is The Green Desk on 95BFM.
Yes, it is time for my favourite segment again. Haven't been able to introduce a Green Desk since I haven't been on the Tuesday Wire in ages, so I'm very excited. Today, Bronnie speaks to Dr. Daniel Hikaroa, the new UNESCO Commissioner for Culture for New Zealand. Let's hear what they've got to say.
This week, I spoke to Dr. Daniel Hikaroa, a senior lecturer at Te Wānanga o Waipapa Māori Studies at the University of Auckland, who has just been appointed the UNESCO Commissioner for Culture for Aotearoa New Zealand. The United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization was founded in 1946, and New Zealand was the second country to ratify the Constitution. Its mission is to build peace, eradicate poverty, and foster sustainable development and intercultural dialogue through education, sciences, and culture. Dan Hikuroa will replace the previous commissioner, Arapata Hakiwai, and hold the position for 3 years. I spoke to him about his expertise that he brings to the table, as well as his aspirations for the role.
Oh, kia ora tātou, hei moka pona tēnei o Ngāti Maniputo me Waikato Tainui Hoki, ko Dan Hikuroa toku ingoa.
Kia ora, Dan. So, talking about this role as the UNESCO Commissioner for Culture, do you have kind of an idea of what the role entails?
I'm learning as I go. I've been to one meeting so far in my appointment, and effectively I was appointed 1 week and then we had a meeting the next. But in kind of policy terms, our role is to advise the New Zealand government on its responsibilities with respect to being a UN partner as part of the educational, scientific and cultural component of it. So that's the kind of policy part. In practical terms, we have a suite of works, we have some strategic priorities, things that we're looking to achieve, and the role of the commissioner is to both provide input onto, you know, how we might plan to do things into the future and also think about how things that have happened in the past, and from time to time, you know, we might make personal contributions in that space as commissioners.
And so UNESCO stands for the UN Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization. How do you feel like with your background with a PhD in geology and also your knowledge of Mātauranga Māori and being an educator as well as your role as a lecturer, how do you feel this kind of encapsulates all these three elements and how do you plan to use that?
Yeah, I suppose when you put it that way, you know, on paper, you know, I fulfill many of the the aspirations of UNESCO, as you say. You know, I teach at a tertiary education institution, have a PhD in the sciences, yet have a role nowadays working in Te Wānanga Waipapa, Māori Studies Department, you know, where I teach tikanga, mātauranga. And my research interests, I think, probably reflect, you know, the type of things that I will aim to do while I'm in UNESCO, and that's, where appropriate, weaving together mātauranga and science. And so recognising that each of those bodies of knowledge is valid in its own right, but when we bring them together and weave them together, bring those threads and strands together, we can create something that's unique, that draws from both of those bodies of knowledge and might even be stronger through doing so, yet each of them maintains its own validity and its own mana as part of this new thing we've woven together. And for me, that's what excites me about being a commissioner for UNESCO, the ability to weave the knowledge, weave the science, weave the mātauranga together. Both myself, I'll do a little bit of it, but where I'm really excited is where I can try and get, you know, the work of the UNESCO, and it's in the communities and it's in those institutions, whether it be scientific or schools or universities, trying to create and facilitate opportunities for that weaving to happen.
Because a big part of UNESCO's work that I was looking at was funding and partnerships with community groups.
Absolutely. And one of my aspirations for fulfilling the role is to make the work of UNESCO more visible, to Māori in particular, to whānau, hapū and iwi. And one of the things about making it visible, of course, is that I also want to show how it's relevant. It's all very well saying, hey, look, we're doing this thing and put out big flashing lights. But if it's not relevant to those folks, they're kind of going to not pay much attention. And I firmly believe that a lot of the strategic interest of UNESCO is of immense relevance for whānau, hapū and iwi. And conversely, I believe that mātauranga has a really strong role to play in the work that UNESCO does. And I should say, UNESCO already recognise the role that mātauranga can play and are supporting and engaging in activities that demonstrably show that. So I'm not trying to propose anything that is new that's not been doing. I'm just looking to build upon that and amplify it. And yeah, and then doing it from a New Zealand perspective, we have a strong kind of lookout and leaning out to our cousins out in the Pacific, but also recognising that New Zealand is seen to internationally, particularly in the United Nations community, as being one of those places in the world that can do things differently, sometimes by remembering that things have been done very well for a long time. So what drives me is not to take a Māori way of doing things to the world. What drives me is to enable Māori communities to realise their dreams and aspirations and help, you know, solve the challenges they face, and then show others around the world, and they may gain some insight, they may gain some inspiration from the work we do here, but never to tell other people what they should be doing.
Yeah, and I noticed when you first got the role, you told Te Ao, the Māori News Network, that you hadn't really heard that much about UNESCO's mahi here in Aotearoa. And I think a lot of people would agree with you there, you know, outside of maybe World Heritage Sites. I feel like it's not really known what UNESCO stands for. But I understand that UNESCO has a big focus on sustainable development and climate change. And I was wondering how you hope to amplify the role of Indigenous knowledge and what that will play in the future of our planet.
I would look to build upon the types of things I've already been doing. And so a key part of what I see my role as a UNESCO commissioner is to just have that hat on with the work that I do. So last year I gave a keynote at the New Zealand Sustainable Development Goals United Nations Conference, and I was very clear that said, you know, when we think in global terms, we can think in terms of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. But when I think in the Aotearoa New Zealand context, I think kaitiakitanga. That's how I see it in my mind, and so that's one example whereby the work we do here in New Zealand, we frame it how it makes sense to us here, and then we can kind of share that with everyone else around the world. So what does that mean specifically? Not only do I see Mātauranga as this amazing resource, and resource was probably the wrong term, as a tāma, you know, in the active sense, something that's to be treasured, in that it is this amazing trove of observational, experiential, lived knowledge of our ecosystems and how they respond and how they react through seasons and how they respond and react to, you know, to sustainable harvesting, as well as being understood and framed within that worldview of being from the earth, not separate from the earth, you know, a part of nature, not apart from nature. And I think it's both that wealth of knowledge, of observation and practice that we can bring, coupled with that view that we are of the planet, not extra from it. And I think, you know, that thinking we can really take to the global because, you know, Indigenous peoples worldwide identify most strongly with the land or with the oceans that, you know, that they say is part of their identity. And I think the message for the planet is, well, we're actually all Indigenous to the planet. And so some of this thinking and some of the way we frame things is going to be important, just as much as the practical detail, say, that we find within our Maramataka, which is that just this amazing system for predicting when it's the right time to do things in the seasons, as well as a system for testing that we keep that knowledge current, and as well as a predictive tool into the future where we might actually start to see those things of climate change manifesting themselves, and we might be able to make adjustments from that point forward.
I realised maybe I might have made an assumption there by not getting you to break down right in the beginning what we meant when we talk about Mātauranga Māori, because I'm sure there are some who that might not be so clear for them.
So Mātauranga is Māori knowledge, inclusive of culture, values and worldview. And then what I and others have demonstrably shown is that Mātauranga Māori is a base of knowledge, a trove of knowledge, that has been generated consistent with the scientific method, but completely independent from kind of the birth of science, as it were, from the Enlightenment. The thing with the scientific method, it's just a really good way for testing stuff to make sure it's accurate and precise. And so the critical thing is that, you know, much Mātauranga has been generated consistent with the scientific method, like the Maramataka that I mentioned before. You know, the Maramataka can be both accurate and can be both precise through time, and those are the hallmarks of any good information. And we know it is because it keeps predicting when things will happen, and they keep happening. So that's the part of Mātauranga which kind of describes the what, and it sits within a worldview. And remembering, of course, that everyone has a worldview, but more often than not, the dominant worldview becomes so dominant it becomes invisible. And it's only when people realise that there is such a thing as a worldview, and that you may have one, or you will have one, and others may have one, and it might be different to yours. And it's not a contest about who's right and wrong. It's just recognising that, gosh, other people see and make sense of the world in a way that which might be very similar to, or might be quite different to, the way I see it. And so that's one of the first steps that I'll be taking often when I explain Mātauranga and I explain these worldviews. And many of these fora where, you know, I may look to do some of the work as a Commissioner for Culture for UNESCO.
And as you were saying before about neither one being superior or inferior to the other and them working sort of complementary to each other, do you get people saying they're fundamentally different? You know, is there a difference that's irreconcilable there, or you think the two can be reconciled quite easily?
There are some folks who are firmly of the belief that science is science. Most people, I think, though, and I'd say by far the majority of people whom I've had discussions with are quite open and are comfortable with, like, yeah, this makes sense. You know, we invoke things like taniwha to explain, you know, what a river geomorphologist might describe as flood events, or what a seismic geologist might describe as earthquakes or tsunamis. You know, we're observing the same things occurring in the environment and we're recording them in a systematic and methodological way, but we invoke different senses of what we believe to be real and what we believe to be possible to explain what it is we see. And so, you know, the geologists will often look to plate tectonics or, you know, your movements of the earth crust, whereas, you know, Māori will look to something like maybe a taniwha to explain what it is we see. But ultimately, we see and describe and frame together in the same way the knowledge. It's just the codification of the knowledge that is different.
I wanted to change tack a little bit and talk about the freshwater and marine side of things, because I understand that's another area that your work focuses on a lot, and I was wondering how you were planning to incorporate that into your new role.
Yeah, and so I'll do that by mentioning in particular two of the five key strategies that, you know, we're focused on at UNESCO at the moment. One of them is Indigenous knowledge and shaping a sustainable future, 2080 to 2021, and the other is oceans for the well-being of people and planet, 2018 to 2021. And so what I'll be bringing specifically is an experience of the work I've done in rivers and waterways and how we look to reframe the way we describe the impact we're having on rivers away from an anthropocentric approach to putting the river at the centre. And of course we're inspired by this work by things such as the Te Uriwera Act, you know, which was the first act to give nature a legal personality. And then, of course, the one that is more widely known is the Te Awa Tupua Act, which gave the Whanganui River. And it describes, and I'll try and bring this from the legislation itself, it speaks about the catchment and all its biophysical and metaphysical elements as an indivisible whole. And so when you've got law like that to start with, you can really start to think, wow, that's incorporating an Indigenous perspective, a Māori worldview, try and reflect it and make it work in law. And so what we're trying to do in the freshwater space and the waterway space, so how can we be inspired by that? How can we look to draw from cutting-edge technology and science? How can we look to draw from mātauranga and different ways of being and different ways of knowing the river, and then completely reframe it? Instead of, you know, reporting on the river and parts per million pollution this and too much drawing out of the river that, to what's the river actually trying to say? How is it speaking to us? And of course it's not physically speaking, but that's the conceptual basis, and we have many different ways for the voice to come forth. And so what we've turned our gaze to now is saying, well, you know, of course what happens on land will end up in the sea. You know, that natural connection between rivers and the ocean, between the land and the sea. Although it makes perfectly practical sense when you think about it, our legal systems are set up in ways in which it does not make practical sense. In fact, it's quite troublesome. And it doesn't really accurately reflect the fact that things that happen on land, particularly that impact our rivers, will ultimately impact our oceans. And so we're looking to bring that same type of thinking. You know, what would the ocean say to us if only it could speak? One of the fundamental challenges is that the way we have set things up in New Zealand, both with respect to laws and with different ministries and departments, means that it's difficult to have a holistic approach to these things. And that's what we think is missing, and that's what we tried to flip it on its head by saying, what does the river say? And more recently, what does the ocean say?
That was Dr. Daniel Hikuroa, the new UNESCO Commissioner for Culture for Aotearoa.
That was The Green Desk on 95 BFM. Tihei Māori Ora.
Yes, that was. Thank you also to someone who texted in saying nature as the source, not a resource. Nice. Really cool interview there. Thank you so much to Bronnie. That's exciting to see what mahi will come out of that.
That was The Wire.
Yes, that was The Wire for another Tuesday. Thanks to Justin for letting me jump back on my old spot. Thank you so much to Jemima, my news director. Thank you to producers Bronnie and Oscar for their awesome work today. And thank you to everyone that we had on. We had Robbie Sutherland, Richard Hills, Tom Kay, and Dr. Daniel Hikuroa. We'll be back tomorrow with more news. Who knows what might happen by then. Stay safe out there. Be kind. Drink water. All the good stuff, all the human stuff. Ka kite anō.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.